Welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian, and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's guest is Emma Bates, professional runner for ASICS and 222 marathoner. Emma Bates grew up in Minnesota and went on to run for Boise State University, where she was a 12-time All-American and an NCAA champion in the 10K. After college, she went on to run professionally for BAA and ultimately decided that environment wasn't for her. She moved out into the wilderness in Idaho and started training for road races. And then in 2021, she was the runner-up finisher at the Chicago Marathon. She moved to Boulder, Colorado and joined Team Boss and has been a 5-time top 10 finisher at a world major, a 3-time member of Team USA, including a 7th place finish at the 2022 World Championships in the Marathon. I hope you enjoy hearing Emma's story. Emma, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So excited to have you here. Definitely by popular demand, you've been a really common request. So I'm so excited for people to hear your story.
I'm absolutely honored to be on the podcast. So pumped to like impart any kind of wisdom I have on your listeners. And hopefully we get into some cool conversations. I know we used to be teammates, and so we have a lot to talk about.
Yes. And we've had a lot of conversations over the years as teammates and beyond just about the importance of fueling and just different aspects that we've seen have been frustrating to us being in the sport for so long. So I think there's a lot of stuff that you're going to be able to help listeners with, which is exciting. And so I'd love to have us start by just having you tell us, how did you get into running? When did you discover it?
I mean, I always loved running. Ever since I was, you know, probably 3 years old, just running around. I was a very hyperactive kid. I loved beating the boys in gym class and the mile. That was like where I think my love of like competition and running fast became something that I really wanted to progress in. And like, it wasn't like I was doing any kind of youth races or anything. It was just gym class. So it was like once a year, once every like quarter that we would do the mile race. And it was just so much fun to beat the boys and to try to beat my time from the previous years. But then it wasn't until sixth grade that I started doing like more team oriented track and field and did the hurdles and the sprints. And I thought I was going to be an Olympian in the 100 meter hurdles, but my mom knew that I was going to be a distance runner, just all the energy that I had. So she was like, go to first day of cross country practice in seventh grade. And if you don't like it, you can go back to the sprints. But she knew that seventh grade me was going to find my people in the cross country scene. I loved all the people that were involved, just like how driven they were. And so that really fueled my need for like just being around people and enjoying the process. So ever since seventh grade, I've just really enjoyed kind of pushing myself alongside other people that are like-minded. So then I went to college and got a scholarship. So that was kind of what fueled the fire going into probably my professional career. I didn't really know professional running was a thing until senior year of college. And all these companies were kind of reaching out and being like, do you still want to do this? And again, I just loved it so much still that I wanted to continue and see what I could do in this level of the sport.
Wow. So runner from a young age with some Olympic aspirations, maybe they've evolved a little bit over the years into more of the distance side of things. But when you did try cross country, and you kind of got more into running in high school, was there a moment where you realized, oh, I could really be good at this?
Yeah, it was basically eighth grade. We were allowed to compete against the high school, like varsity athletes. And so I, at first, just like would follow behind them and just like see if I could like match their pace. But at the end of the year, I was beating a lot of them. And so I knew that I had a knack for it. And it was just as fun as beating the boys in gym class, I would say, was beating those seniors when I was in, you know, ninth grade. So I knew that I would have a long like relationship with running. I just didn't know where it would take me. So again, just progressing like little by little every single year and like passing more people every single year, that really just helped in like, kind of stepping stones of my life. And like it helped so much, not only in running, but it helped in like the confidence of myself and being able to take all that hard work and put it into, being a student and doing well in my academics and taking that to college and beyond.
Yeah. Did you feel like you had life balance in high school? Like, did you feel like you had a lot of pressure on yourself with running, or was it just kind of part of something that you did, but not your entire world?
That was something in high school that I was really lucky to not have, was that external pressure or internal pressure for that matter. I knew that I just always knew that I was going to get better and better. And I had such a great base and foundation for that in my coaches and my teammates and my parents. Like my parents never pushed me. They always were very encouraging, but they were proud of me no matter what. It didn't matter what place I took. But it was my dad, my eighth grade year, that at conference, I told him, like I'm running this race against all these seniors. And he was like, well, I mean, somebody has to win the race. It may as well be you. And I'm like, Dad, I'm only an eighth grader. I'm not able to do that. But I was actually able to win that race. And I feel like that kind of like just support and that belief in me really helped me to rise to the occasion. And I had so many coaches that again instilled the hard work and, kind of the drive, but they also knew that it needed to be fun. So, there would be so many days of like, if we didn't feel like running, we would just like kind of go run, to Dairy Queen and just like enjoy each other's company. And that was the run for the day. And so I think they really knew how to kind of balance out that, we want the most out of ourselves, but they kind of brought us back down to, a level of like just enjoying the process and knowing that, academics did come first. So we got to really focus on that. And then everything else kind of falls into place. So once your life is like kind of in a space where you feel confident and just so whole, you're able to really excel. And so that was something that I had in high school, but then in college it started to get to the point of, maybe a little bit of internal pressure, too much external pressure. And that was where I really tried to find myself again. So yeah, it wasn't like a certain point in college where it like just kind of clicked into like being too serious. It just kind of happened over time and it kind of like eats away at you a little bit and you don't realize that you're not balanced as you could be. So once I graduated college, I kind of went back to my high school mentality and tried to focus on just the process alone and just like every single day kind of getting better, not just in my performance, but in my mental headspace.
Yeah. And I feel like that speaks a lot to just kind of how your mind naturally is as a person. Like when your dad told you you could win the race, instead of interpreting that as pressure to win the race, you interpreted that as somebody believing in you and like, why not me? Can you give any advice to any high schoolers listening, maybe how to flip that script in their head and kind of take that pressure off of themselves and just make it something that is fun, but also, challenging yourself to do the best you can?
I always just bring it back to it's just you versus you. And that is, being better than you were the day before. And that may not be like, again, performance, but that may be like your mental space. Or like, I try to take every single workout, and it's not that I need to do this workout faster the next week. I need to focus on doing it in a way that feels easier. So I'm not running faster, but it just feels more at ease. And that kind of calms my mind as well. I'm not like trying to drive, or put a lot of pressure on myself for like numbers or times. It's like really just that internal kind of like compass of like, am I stressed? Am I, kind of feeling overboarded? Like, usually it feels like when I'm getting kind of over my head, like I feel like I'm drowning. Like, I just feel like I can't hear anything around me. I can't like see anything. So, when I'm out there on a run, I really try to focus on all of my surroundings. And if I'm not taking in all of my surroundings, then I know that that internal compass is off and I need to kind of reset or recalibrate and kind of slow down and try to get myself back to like a baseline of feeling good and feeling like things are easy again. Because running is hard. Like you do push yourself, but it shouldn't feel hard like 24/7. It's like you clock in and you clock out kind of thing at practice for those workouts. And easy days, it should be really easy. So that's what I focus on too. Hard days hard, easy days easy. And that keeps the balance in just kind of my overall well-being.
I love that. That's such great advice and definitely good to remember. It's not about comparing yourself to everyone around you. That's what's so cool, I think, about the sport of running is it's just kind of challenging yourself to be better than you were the last week. And it doesn't have to be a heroic effort. It's just knowing, okay, I did this workout last week and I struggled on my fifth rep, and this week I felt smooth on my fifth rep, and that's a really big win, even if you didn't run faster or even if you ran a little slower. That's okay. So I love that approach. And it sounds like you were surrounded by people who really helped you with that mentality. What was, growing up in the Midwest, growing up in Minnesota, what was your family's relationship with food like, and how was food talked about in your household?
I grew up in a Midwest household where we ate a lot of hot dish. So a lot of like tater tots and ground beef, and it wasn't a lot of like I would say nutrient dense foods. So it was things that we could just kind of get by in. And I didn't come from like a wealthy family, so it was just kind of like whatever my parents could kind of put on our plates. But I knew that I needed to fuel myself properly to get better at running. So I tried to kind of help my parents figure out kind of what was best for us as a whole. And through my running and kind of like teaching them like kind of all of like the things that we need to fuel, like carbs and protein and getting a balanced diet, they were able to kind of take on that as well. And so we became just a healthier household. Like I joke, I used to like have a baby bottle, and my parents would put Dr. Pepper in my baby bottle because they just didn't know back then. It was such a different time. And so my parents drank soda, and I drank soda all throughout, up until high school. And then I started to really focus on kind of using food as fuel instead of, something that like you can still enjoy it, but it doesn't need to be, these sugar-induced coma type foods. So it was really fun to kind of go through that process with my parents, and like they are so much better for it and they were so much healthier for it. So it was different that like, it wasn't instilled in my education, but I started to figure stuff out and like amongst my friends and like all of my cross country teammates and everything. And I still take that, today.
I love that. I love that you were able to kind of work with your parents and create a healthier household as a family. I really do feel like being involved in athletics obviously can go too far sometimes, but I do think it encourages kind of everyone to have healthier habits because fueling is so critical to performance.
Exactly.
So you had a great high school career. You got recruited. You ended up going to Boise State on a full ride scholarship. What was that transition like for you going from high school to college?
It was a pretty jarring experience, being on your own and again, fueling yourself, eating on your own, like going to the cafeteria where there's ice cream and cookies and all these good things every single day in front of you. I ended up gaining like the freshman 15 and then some, but through that whole experience, I was able to like really learn and hone in on exactly what I needed. So, it was good to have all of those things like available, but kind of in moderation also. And so it was a cool experience. I was able to like get really strong from running also, like, just fueling my body maybe differently and probably more things like more fat, more sugars and stuff like that. It just kind of like helped develop who I was as a runner and get really strong. But then kind of again bring it back into kind of really focusing on those foods that really help produce performances and produce things that help you feel better every single day. Cookies and ice cream weren't making me feel better every single day. It's a nice treat to have for sure. And as long as you're combining it with all of the other food groups. So going into that cafeteria, finding, the meats, the proteins and the carbs and everything, and then have the dessert and the ice cream and the cookies. That was a balance that I was able to get into sophomore, senior year and everything. So
Yeah, that's a super common struggle that a lot of runners have when they transition from high school to college, just understanding, your body and learning more about how to fuel yourself and being in the dining hall where it's just like, free for all, like buffets and all this stuff. It's so tempting to just get every single thing. And I will promise you, by the end of the semester, you're going to be sick of everything they have to offer. So pacing yourself on that just helps you not burn out on the cafeteria food. But I also think that it can be tricky with that those body changes, because I've talked about this before. Body changes happen when you get to college. They're supposed to happen. Your training is looking different. You're probably lifting more or heavier, or maybe for the first time. Mileage is higher. And so we're going to see runners get stronger and just kind of fill out a little bit more. That's how female body works. You're transitioning a little bit when you're from going from high school to college. And I think sometimes runners have a hard time distinguishing between, does this mean I'm overdoing it in the cafeteria? Do I need to monitor my food? Or, is this something that's supposed to be happening? And I'm curious, was that anything that you struggled with, those body shifts, and how did you navigate those without becoming restrictive?
yeah, I definitely went through like the bodily changes. Like the hips were getting bigger and my muscles were getting bigger. And I never thought twice about it just because I was progressing and I was getting faster every semester and every race. And so I was getting in the gym and I was noticing like the more I got in the gym, the more fuel I needed to take in as well. So it was I wasn't lifting as much my freshman year. I actually ended up getting injured my freshman year, I think because of all of those things. But once I started to hone in on, the right fuel and then lifting and kind of getting my body to like just a really a great place, like a foundation, I was able to not think about food really. It was like I kind of got into a routine. That was something that really helped, was just kind of get into like a habit of I'm gonna eat these foods these days and have food on these days. So like really food planning or meal planning, and then focusing when I had those heavy workouts or those heavy lifts, kind of taking in probably a little bit more. And so again, I had body changes that like I've seen, like even to this day, I progress so much, but I've gotten faster and faster every year. So those changes are good changes, I think, just because I'm able to really push myself and keep going in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really good point. Those body changes aren't anything that's negative. I think a lot of athletes jump right to body changes equals bad, and that's really not true. And our bodies are supposed to change. They need to change in order for us to stay healthy in the sport. And it's okay if they change and not to just get reactive with that, kind of embrace those changes. And, the injury that you mentioned, that's also kind of common when you transition into college. Again, just totally different training approach. You're also walking around on campus all day. Maybe you're not getting as much sleep. Your lifestyle looks a little bit different. And so there's a lot of factors that can go into injury. And, obviously, cookies and ice cream are not to blame for an injury at all. It's more just kind of figuring out how to support your body's needs with the right nutrition and balancing all of that. And that's a lot to learn at 18, 19 years old when you leave home for the first time.
Exactly, like having that period of growth and education about yourself and focusing on it, like not just ignoring it, but like really being honest with yourself about how you're feeling. And if, again, the cookies and the ice cream, make you feel good and you're still fueling properly in other areas and you're able to like, really get the most out of yourself. Like again, don't be restricting yourself at all. And that's something that I've learned over the years is I don't deprive myself of anything that I want, especially with the amount of mileage that I'm running. I know that my body needs fuel and I know that anything that I put in can really help. So it's really just finding all the things that like make you feel really good and keeping on, putting that into your body and again, the cookies and the ice cream. I eat cookies and ice cream every single day. That is something that is so great about running, is like you're going to be burning so much fuel. So like that stuff is important as well.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. And I think another aspect in college that a lot of runners don't necessarily experience in high school can be the team environment, the team culture around fueling. Sometimes that can be hard to come into. Was that anything that you struggled with at all during your transition?
Yeah, definitely through all stages of my running life, I've had a lot of people around me that kind of struggle a little bit, and it can be triggering for certain individuals and everything. I personally just try to focus on myself again, like it's me versus me. It doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. If they're, doing something and they're getting faster, that's great for them. But I just need to kind of put the blinders on and realize that we're all different. All of our bodies are different and all of our needs are different. So I just really tried to focus on myself when that kind of stuff was going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you get diagnosed with celiac in college?
I did, yes. So halfway through my freshman year, I was diagnosed with celiac disease. And so that's an autoimmune disorder where you can't consume gluten or wheat. It starts to attack your intestines. And that was actually something that was really difficult to figure out at first. And it was hard to like kind of navigate what I could eat, what I couldn't eat. And also like I was starting to eat different things than other people. So other people started to become affected by the things that I was eating and the things that I needed. So they thought that, oh, Emma's getting faster. I need to do what she's doing and eat what she's eating. But that is not the case at all, especially if you don't have celiac disease. You should not be depriving yourself of those nutrients because you can really run into some issues. And a couple of my teammates did, and that was something that I needed to like explain, like, no, I have to eat this for my health. My intestines are going to be completely messed up, and it's a really problematic thing for me, but like you need to do what you need to do. So it was interesting to see that kind of side of things. Like again, like we want to get faster and we see our counterparts and our peers, get faster and we want to kind of emulate that. But when it comes to fueling, when it comes to your health, it's all individual.
And what was that like going through that process? How did you kind of figure out something was wrong and you needed to do more testing to even determine that you had celiac?
Every time I ate, I just like had to curl up in a fetal position. I was in so much pain. It was like constipation, or it was diarrhea, or it was like any kind of thing that like just I couldn't get through a single run without like having to stop at the bathroom or have to like walk it in. And so that was something that was like, oh, this needs to be dealt with because if I can't run, I can't, get better. So I need to really see somebody about this. And that's if you feel like something's wrong, ask for help. So that was something that I did right away. And I got the genetic blood test for celiac disease. So it runs in my family. It's a very genetic disorder. So that was something that was really just it was life-changing because I had like stomach aches all throughout high school too, but I thought it was normal. And then it had to get to a certain point of like not being able to like finish a run for me to actually act on it. So it took me a while, but I eventually got help and figured it out and cut out all gluten and all wheat. And I feel so much better for it and have really just progressed because I'm not in, physical pain every single day when I go out.
Yes, and that's such a great point. I think a lot of runners, especially, get into this headspace of, oh, stomach issues are normal. Runners are supposed to have to stop for the bathroom on runs. That is not true at all. Like, I think in all my years of running post college, I had like two runs where I had to stop for the bathroom, and one of them I had food poisoning. Like, it's not normal to have to stop on runs. It's not something you should be suffering through. There's usually an underlying cause, and it's not always as extreme as, having celiac disease, but it can be. So that's always good to make sure you're advocating for yourself and reaching out for help. And then you, of course, had to adjust your diet. You had to cut out gluten, which can be really hard for runners. Do you have any tips for any runners listening who are gluten-free or who have to navigate food allergies?
So it's a lot easier nowadays to be gluten-free. There's so many options now, but really, just going towards the whole foods, like the whole grains, like rice. And I eat a lot of tortillas, like corn tortillas. Those really help. But I also eat peanut butter jelly toast every single morning, and I get the gluten-free bread. It's a super easy thing to kind of manage. But yeah, you're just like really leaning into more of like the whole food groups and like the vegetables and the meats and like everything that you would see at a grocery store that's not in those packaged foods. So it's like obviously cereal and like crackers and like stuff like that that are a little trickier, but it's still very manageable. There's so many restaurants to go to for something like celiac disease. And there's actually an app, the Gluten Free Me app. So I use that a lot, especially traveling, can be pretty tricky. So I pull up this app and it tells me all of like the gluten-free places. So yeah, it's like I have kind of a intolerance to eggs as well, so I have to be careful eating eggs. So that's another food allergy that I kind of am aware of. So it's really just paying attention to the packaged foods, though. Like if you're eating balanced and in whole foods, it's a pretty easy way to like just get all your nutrients and get things that like make you feel good.
For sure. And there are tons of naturally gluten-free foods out there. Like you said, rice is a great one, oats, potatoes, quinoa, beans. Like there's so many things that you can use before having to turn to all those like gluten-free versions of packaged foods, which I know can be hit or miss for flavor and texture. But there's lots of stuff out there, and it is just kind of figuring out what works well for you and reminding yourself it's what's going to help you feel better. And, you know, potentially working with a dietitian to help you navigate that can also be helpful. But sounds like once you were able to figure that out, you started feeling a lot better. You had a fantastic career while you were at Boise. You were a 12-time All-American and you won NCAAs in the 10K. What was that progression like for you throughout your time in college?
It was quite rocky at first. Again, just like figuring out, how to properly fuel myself through celiac disease and everything. But once I got a handle on that, it became a lot easier to kind of just focus on again the process and enjoying it. And that was something that got me to the point of winning a national title. So that was amazing, like just that progression of like I think I was like 17:40 in the 5K my freshman year. Then the next year it was like breaking 17, and then the next year it was breaking 16. So it was kind of like, smallish increments until I was able to garner a national title. So it wasn't something that I expected to happen by my junior year. I didn't expect it to happen at all, but I just like really wanted to get better and better. And that was something that, again, it was like a day by day process. So, then by senior year, though, it became a little rocky because of all the external and internal pressure that I felt. So that was something that I really had to figure out after. Like I ended up taking like 10th at my senior year track meet when I was the favorite to win. So that was like a tough pill to swallow, but like that enabled me to learn and grow and to figure out, how to kind of get back on track, mentally and physically. So I love my entire, collegiate career just because there was so many highs and so many lows that I like really learned so much about myself that I carry with me today.
Yeah, and I think that's such a good, I mean, it's so hard. We've all, as runners, have gone through that where we have this expectation of ourselves and we don't meet it, and it's hard. But I also think, like, for me, what I found was when I would line up and I had all this pressure on myself, I had this fear of what if I don't succeed? What if I don't reach this goal? And then you have a race where you don't. And you live and you get through it, and running is still there. Your friends still care about you. Your family still loves you. You know, life goes on. And I'm curious, like, for you now, having come out the other side of that, is there anything that you wish younger Emma would have known going into those races where you had put so much pressure on yourself?
Honestly, nobody cares. That's what I
Yeah.
would have known at the time. Like, I know that sounds harsh, but like, nobody cares like you do. And nobody remembers it. Nobody thinks about it. And so, my senior year, I was favorited to win and, took 10th. I mean, I just fell apart. And nobody talks about that. Nobody knows anything about that anymore. So like even, the next year, nobody cared. And that's something that like is so freeing once you figure out like, wow, like this isn't that big of a deal. Like it's really special to like put yourself into all into the that moment. But again, life goes on. You know, you have your friends, you have your family, you have all these other great things going on around you. So I think it's like focusing on all of that and just like giving gratitude to everything that you do have. So I still have to remind myself like to not take things too seriously and to look around and be like, wow, my life is really great. And the fact that I get to, you know, do this and challenge myself every day is really special. And I have to remember that.
Yeah, I love that. That nobody cares. That's honestly something that I was always trying to remind myself towards the end. It's like no one is looking up your results obsessively or judging you for them. It feels like they are, but that's not what's happening at all. And after having been a little more removed from the running world, it was so funny. Nick and I were talking about this in New York. Like the 5K champs happened, and I remember I had a super disappointing race at the 5K champs, and I was like so embarrassed, and I didn't have a good day. And this year we were there, and we were like, oh, was that today? I wonder what happened. Like, didn't look up results. And I was like, nobody cared. Like, nobody cared at all how that race went for me at that time, but it felt like such a big deal. And I think that's such a good reminder. And your story also shows that a bad race doesn't ruin your career, because after college, you went on to run right out of college professionally with BAAs, Boston Athletic Association. What was that transition like to the professional running world from college?
That was probably just as jarring of an experience as it was to go from high school to college. College to professional athletics is, there's nobody holding your hand. Like, there is so much autonomy, which is terrifying. So you have to choose your races. You have to like figure out which race you want to focus on and who you want to run with. Like, it was such a big challenge to figure out what team or what company to go with and whether or not I'm making the right decision. So like it was a very daunting experience just trying to figure out like where I wanted to live and where I wanted to train. You know, I hadn't been really anywhere. You know, I had traveled for races, you know, in college, but I didn't really know anything else that was going on. So it's really trusting yourself that you made the right decision. And I didn't run very well when I was on the Boston Athletic Association, but I learned so much, and I learned what it was like to like be on my own and kind of figure stuff out and be autonomous. So I value that time so much because it brought it to where I am today. And I can't like say enough about the experience. Just like, you know, I really realized what I didn't want. I didn't want to be in a city. I didn't want to be, you know, on just like a team that wasn't like-minded. Like, I knew the people that I wanted to be around. And so it was a really good thing to just kind of like rule out some stuff and really kind of internalize everything and figure that out where I needed to go next.
Yes. And that's also a good reminder that even the mistakes are so important, because you learn, if you don't get what you want, you learn what you don't want. And that's a really important step to making the changes to get you to where you want to be. Something that you and I have talked a little bit about before, your early pro experience, you got some pretty terrible nutrition advice from coaches. What were they telling you that you kind of were flagging in the back of your mind? Like, maybe this isn't great, but you're in an environment where it's really hard to stand up for yourself and say no.
Yeah, there was a lot of advice that maybe wasn't so direct, but it was like a lot of things that coaches would say off the cuff. And coaches don't realize that their words hold so much weight, and their athletes are gonna internalize that and really, you know, hold that. And a lot of my coaches would say things like, you know, do you only eat when you're hungry? And it's like, well, no, I eat like 3 meals a day. And they're like, well, I only eat when I'm hungry. And it's like, well, okay, but like I know that I need to get in these three food groups and everything, or these three meals to fuel myself properly. Or, you know, there was a coach that really encouraged the keto diet. So it was like high fat, no carb. And I ended up losing my period for 4 months because of that, and just felt absolutely awful. And I went to the doctor, and I was just like, I am not feeling great. Like, something is off. And he asked me, and he's like, you're not eating carbs. You're a distance athlete. You know, you're running like, you know, 100 miles a week. Like, you need to fuel yourself. And it's crazy because I knew all these things, but when your coach is telling you or encouraging or saying something that kind of like gets in your ear and you start to second guess yourself, I mean, it's really hard to kind of get back on track. And so I through all of those experiences, and I noticed a lot of things that coaches would say also to my teammates about like their eating habits and everything. And finally, I was like, that is not their space. So I was like, I am just going to go to them for the coaching advice. I'm going to see other people, professionals like nutritionists or a dietitian, and get that advice from them.
Yes, I think that's so important for athletes to hear because it is so hard when you're in this environment where you're there for running, you're there for the team, you're there for the coaching, and all of a sudden they start sneaking in little nutrition related things. And you want to do anything you can to be the best athlete you can be. And at that point, you always have like, full trust in your coach. You kind of have to if you're all in that process. And so those little things that coaches say, they really, really do stick with you. Like I've said this before, I had a coach long time ago say something about only eating 500 calories at meals 3 times a day, which is like 1500 calories. And even still, as a dietitian, I'll be like, oh, that's more than 500 calories. It just like pops into my head out of nowhere. And of course, I'm like, okay, who cares? That doesn't matter. But I just don't think coaches realize how much those kinds of things stick with their athletes and how much they impact them long term. And I think as athletes, being in those situations, like you said, it's really hard to know how to stand up for yourself, how to navigate that situation. So having been through that, do you have any advice for athletes who find themselves in those situations who are uncomfortable or not really sure how to interpret or, I guess, respond to what their coaches are telling them outside of the training piece?
Yeah, honestly, like looking back, I wish I would have confronted the coaches about the things that they said and maybe get more clarity on it. And maybe they didn't mean the things that they were saying, or maybe they, didn't realize how impactful it was or how much it resonated with me. But yeah, it's like I think more and more we're starting to realize the impact that coaches do have on young athletes, especially. And so I just urge all, coaches that are getting into it to like really focus on not just the physical piece of coaching, but the mental piece of coaching. And again, your words have weight. So, but as an athlete, it's trying to realize that they're human too. Realizing that, they have their own stuff going on, and maybe they don't quite realize that the information that they're giving is not great and shouldn't be said. So, again, maybe just communicating or taking it with a grain of salt, not, using those words and really internalizing them in the way that can impact the way that you kind of conduct yourself in your fueling and your life.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And like thinking about your coach is human too. Your coaches were probably runners in the 80s, and God knows what they were doing with nutrition in the 80s. And so they're just kind of like talking about what they did or what they heard. And obviously things have changed. So even asking questions like, oh, did you do research on this? Is there any like studies I can read about this? A choice to go keto, will that actually help my performance? Or even just saying, like, yeah, okay, great. And then seeking out your own opinion from somebody like a dietitian and nutritionist who can help you maybe understand that in the context a little bit more of how it might actually impact you long term. Because, like you said, it really negatively impacted your health and your well-being. And honestly, like your ability to love running when you don't feel good, it's just not fun to train when you don't feel good. So I think that's really, really great advice, really helpful because I know that's something, unfortunately, a lot of athletes do navigate. So then you decided that ultimately, BAA wasn't the environment you wanted to be in, and you made a change. Where did you go after BAA?
I went the complete opposite of a city like Boston and went off grid in the mountains of Idaho. I moved back to kind of where I went to college, Boise, but the mountains of Boise, and lived off the grid. So that means like no electricity, no water. It was really just very primitive living.
So what was that like living off the grid?
It was really fun for like 9 months out of the year. It was in the mountains, so it snowed a lot. So it made things really difficult transportation wise. But that time in my life was really impactful just because it helped me to slow down. It helped me to like kind of focus on the little things and how important water is, how important, it is to like have socialization because you're out in the middle of nowhere. So I really realized through that experience, like how much I enjoy being around people, how much I enjoy running with people. But it also, like, I think everybody should live off grid or should live without water or running water for a while, just because you do realize like how difficult it is for so many people out there that don't have fresh, clean running water every single day. So it really made my life harder, but running easier. E running was like the easy part of my day, which was so refreshing. It wasn't a chore anymore. It was something that I got to do. My chores were like gathering water and like making sure we had electricity and enough warmth for our house. And then running was like that outlet of like my me time and time to just like kind of relax and just like let go of myself a little bit.
Wow, that must have been a really nice flip of the script from how it had been before.
Yes, I didn't feel like I was drowning anymore. I felt like the most me version of myself ever. But again, it was only for like 3 years, living off grid. And then I realized like I want to be more integrated in communities. So again, it was great to like have that city life, have the off-grid lifestyle, and then I eventually moved to Boulder.
Yes, which is where we met, and you joined Team Boss. And around the same time that you kind of moved off the grid, you were starting to transition a little bit from the track to the roads. And I'm curious, what was that pull for you to transition to the roads?
Honestly, training for the roads was so much easier for me. I, upon living off grid, I was also working like 50 to 60 hour weeks. I was working at Whole Foods. I was nannying as well, and then trying to run like 100 miles a week on top of it, which again, running was my outlet. So running 100 miles a week was like wonderful. But I didn't have much time for anything else. So that was like the only caveat, but it was a great experience of like learning how to work hard and really just kind of putting my head down and getting better. And it wasn't until I started doing that and working all those shifts that I realized that I really wanted to try my hand at the marathon. I knew that I was going to be good at the marathon just because so many people had told me, but I wasn't sure where my running career was going to go. I wasn't sponsored at the time, so again, I was just working. But I just wanted to see what I could do. And so all of those mileage that I put in, I put into CIM Marathon. That was my first one. It also served as US Championships, and I set out to break like 2:30 and I ended up running 2:28, and that was kind of where my next phase of my career started, my marathon career. And ASICS came to me right after that, and I had always wanted to run for ASICS, and so I was very pumped that they came to me after CIM, and then I wasn't having to work as much. So I wasn't working 50 to 60 hour weeks. I was still nannying on the side as well, but it was nice to again have running not only be like my outlet, but have it be a career and make money off of it again. So that was a really fun time.
And the roads are they're just so fun. Like, it's such a different environment from track. I remember doing road races. Like, first of all, they actually like cover your travel. Whereas in track, you're spending like $1,000 to go to every track meet to fly and stay in a hotel and all that stuff. And the roads, they're just so generous. They're very like hospitable on the roads, which was always super fun. And then there's also this just kind of like camaraderie amongst the road athletes because you're lining up with the same people every time. And it's just such a small, like kind of close-knit group. And the races are so long. I found it felt I mean, it's obviously competitive, but during the race itself, it felt like you were kind of running with people and like working together instead of just on your own grinding and trying to beat as many people as possible on the track, which, again, you are trying to beat people on the roads, but it's just such a different environment and it's such a fun experience. And you obviously have become kind of queen of the roads. You've been one of the most consistent US marathoners for sure. I think across the board, you always show up, and even on days that aren't your best days, you're very consistently in the top, which is incredible. What do you feel like has allowed you to be so consistent on the roads?
I think again, it's the enjoyment factor. So, like you said, on the track is so much different than the roads. Track is like, you have your group of runners and there's nobody else that is out there with you. It's just like 20 athletes that are on the track. Whereas the roads, there's thousands, hundreds of thousands. And so when I line up for a marathon, I know that there's, thousands of runners, behind me or, however many in front of me trying just as hard at this thing that like, we're crazy to sign up for. 26.2 miles is just ridiculous to like want to go and do through the roads of like, these cities. And I think that's what drives me is just like knowing that there's so many people out there that are like not only racing, but training for these races out the door every single day. That's my motivation factor is like thinking about all of the moms and dads and like the, full-time working people that are like getting out the door and like pushing themselves so that they can get to this starting line. And that is what, I don't know, just fuels me so much is just like that kind of excitement for something so simple as running. Like, I think again, like that first day of cross country practice, I was just like, I found my people. Well, that's how I feel on the roads too. I found like thousands of people that just like, that get it, that just like wanna push themselves and just do this crazy thing of running and see what they can do and kind of uncover who they are. That's the thing about the marathon is you get to see every version of yourself through those 26.2 miles. And that is, it's always different. Every single race is different, and I uncover just a little bit more about myself each time.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. That's like gives me goosebumps thinking about it in that way and having that camaraderie, not just of the pros on the start line, but the thousands of people behind you. And you've now competed in a lot of world majors, which obviously have thousands of people in them. And in Chicago 2021, you were the runner-up finisher. And that was your first race on Team Boss. And I just remember we were all watching you just like losing it. It was crazy to see. And that was one of your earlier marathons. What was that like having that incredible breakthrough? I remember that was one of those years where the weather was really hard. Like, tell us about that race. What was that like for you to realize that you were not only finishing as the top American, but you were the second place finisher at a world major?
Honestly, the only thing I was thinking of was making my team boss teammates proud. Like, I just came onto a team of like these incredible athletes and women that just, again, put their heart and soul into this sport every single day. And so I wanted to do the same. And so I got up to that starting line and I was just like, all I want to do today is just like make my teammates proud. Like that is the main goal. And I didn't expect it to land me into second place, but there was so many team boss teammates out there cheering, and I could feel everybody from like back home cheering on the screens too. I just felt so much love and support that it was probably like one of the easiest races I've ever run, just because I felt so much excitement and love and just belief in me. And so that was, again, just driving me to the finish line was like all of those feels. And it gives me goosebumps thinking about that to this day, just because, again, how special it was. And I had never felt that on a team before. And so that was one for the books, that's for sure.
Oh, that's so sweet. We were having so much fun watching you. And I think that really does speak to how much the mental side of the sport plays a role in performance and being happy and having that life balance, being in a situation that's working for you is so important. Is there anything you can speak to for other athletes who might be struggling with that? Why is that so important to you to have a good environment that you're in and life balance with running?
It really takes a village, and I think it's because, running is really hard and motivation can come and go, and the accountability factor of having people around you is really important because there are so many days where I just don't want to get out the door, but knowing that I have people that will get out the door with me is so special, and it's something that I don't take for granted. Like I try to find anybody to run with every single day just because I know that, they probably need it as well, to get out the door. And so, yeah, I think that's something mentally that I struggled with in the past is like I get so much in my head that when I have other people around, it allows me to not think so much as well. So that's really, really nice. And people, again, who are have similar goals. Even if you're on a team like, Team Boss, when I first joined, I was the only marathoner. And no, nobody else is like, driving and progressing towards the marathon or trying to do these big things in the marathon, but they're trying to do big things in, the 1500 and the steeple and this or that. And like, you still feel that excitement and those vibes. And it just gives you so much momentum. So I think it's really important to find yourself an environment in which you thrive and finding people that are like minded and help you get excited about the sport in general.
Yeah, I love that because when you're training for a marathon, you're spending a lot of time running and hopefully with people or people there to drive next to you or cheer you on or whatever it is. And it is really important to have that support. And that's definitely something that's, I think, a little different with the roads as well. And obviously, a huge thing that's different with the roads is fueling. When you're running a marathon, now you're adding in that fueling during the race, fueling during training. What was that like for you figuring out how to fuel during the marathon?
It was so awful. I was throwing up so much because I could not figure out how much to take at first. And I like wanted to take enough, but I didn't want to take too much because, again, GI distress and everything, but I didn't want to bonk. And so it was quite a process. It took probably 3 years to kind of hone in on it. And it got better and better each time. But again, like my first marathon, I think I threw up like 3 times and I was like, oh, this is normal. This is what you have to go through, but it's not. It's really not. So again, it may take time, but it is possible to figure it out. But that was something that I wish I had kind of gained more knowledge or education through like dietitians, through just what do I take, how much do I take, like what is enough, what is too much. They can really help you with that. So that's something that I wish that I would have leaned into more then. Now I kind of have it figured out. So I with the marathon, you're taking I only take gel, a gel every 5K, which has been my like preferred kind of fueling, but so many people are so different. So trying to figure out like how much you burn, what your metabolism is, and how much you sweat. It's like it is such a science, but you can figure it out just by going out and doing it in practice every day. So practice makes perfect.
Absolutely. And just a reminder for anyone listening, Emma taking it every 5K is taking a gel every like 15 minutes, basically. Not actually, but you're taking gels really, really frequently. And that's a huge part of the fueling is figuring out how to work your way up to those intervals and getting, X amount of carbs per hour and the hydration piece. And something that you do that I love that you do is you fuel during training. You're not just fueling during your races, you're fueling during long runs, you're fueling during workouts. How has that made a difference for you personally in your training and race day?
The biggest difference, I think, in fueling during the workouts is the recovery process. So having that fuel during it just helps so much more recovering. And like I always make sure to get a big meal in after each workout and each long run. But I really think that through the gels that I take during the process and water, the gels that I take don't require water, but a lot of people are taking in water because their gels require it to get the benefit of it, but I just make sure to get a lot of water and a lot of electrolytes afterwards. So that's something that I focus on the day before a race too, is getting a lot of fuel and a lot of electrolytes in before I run the marathon because I just take the gels, which again, I feel really good off of just taking those gels during the race.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are definitely gels out there where you don't have to take water. So many different ways you can approach it, and it is very individualized. So I love that advice. And yes, the fueling during training, game changer from a recovery standpoint, which obviously when you're running 120 miles a week, anything you can do to improve your recovery and stay consistent and avoid injury is huge, which for the most part, you've really done. You really haven't had many injuries throughout your career. You've stayed really healthy. And I think that's a true testament to how much care you take taking care of yourself on a daily basis with your fueling and fueling during and all of that to support all of your training.
Yeah, I've never had a bone injury of any kind, and I really attest that to well, one, growing up in the Midwest, dairy was a huge one, getting in that calcium. But I again, like, just feeling good and feeling myself in the way that it just I feel strong and powerful, and like I'm just fully present. And I think that's something that you can, little cues that you can use if you realize that you're not fueling enough, is like just brain fog or not feeling like you can do the workout like the next day. Like if I finish a workout or a long run, I want to feel like I can do a workout or a long run the next day. So it's like making sure that you're refueling in that way, and just kind of rejuvenating your system.
Yes, absolutely. And tuning into your body, noticing when something's wrong, which, speaking of, you recently just shared, you were just recently diagnosed with hemochromatosis. So, for anyone listening who doesn't know what that is, what is hemochromatosis and how did you get that diagnosis?
So hemochromatosis is a blood disorder in which your body stores too much iron. So it absorbs and stores too much iron, and it starts to get to your organs because your organs start to store up those iron stores. And that is when it can get like really just risky. Like you can have liver issues and heart issues. So I caught it in a decent amount of time. I don't know how long I've been dealing with it, but I was just having a lot of fatigue, and I was just not being able to get through certain workouts. And so finally I realized like I need to seek help, because something just feels off. And so I went in and got a blood panel, and my iron was extremely high. It was over 400, and that was like a big red flag. And then I started getting more blood panels, and I had like high liver enzymes. And so my doctor was like, we need to test you for hemochromatosis, the gene. So if you have the genetic disorder, likely your parents have it as well. So I had the homozygous gene, which means both my parents had or were carriers of it. So that just means that I can't consume iron or iron-enriched foods, or else my iron will go higher and higher, and I could have a lot of organ failure, basically.
Yeah, which is crazy. And I think that's another reason why I encourage runners to get blood work done because a lot of symptoms of high iron are similar to symptoms of low iron. And if you just say, oh, I'm tired, I should take iron, obviously, if you had done that, that would have made things 10 times worse. So it is really important to, again, advocate for yourself, get regular blood work done, know your body and what you're looking for, and have doctors who understand things through a sports performance lens because it might have been a different situation if, your doctor wasn't trained in sports and tests to get done to look for to see how you're doing. Because if they had just run a CBC panel, it might not have come up, running a full iron panel and having all those doctors that can understand your symptoms and interpret them correctly is so important for health in runners for sure.
Yes, and that's something that I would definitely advise everybody. I made the mistake of I had low iron for a while, so I started taking supplements, and turns out that that was probably poisoning myself. So I would definitely urge, if you do have, a suspicion that you have low iron or high iron or whatever it may be, go see a doctor before you take any kind of supplements.
Yes, absolutely. Really, really great advice. And I'm glad you were able to figure that out. I know you're still kind of navigating that, and you're going to be heading to Spain next week for the Valencia Marathon. How are you feeling for Valencia?
Good, good. Again, like we're taking things day by day with this hemochromatosis diagnosis. I feel really good some days and not so great other days. So it's just kind of managing that, and like managing the mileage and managing how much I need to recover and everything like that. But we're still excited about, really big goals, and I think that I can do big things. And I'm not gonna let, blood disorder hold me back. I'm just gonna fuel myself properly and get to that starting line in the best way possible.
I love that. That's all you can do. That's all you can ask for. Yeah. Well, before we get into our rapid fire questions, any last words of wisdom or pieces of advice for any runners listening?
I again, I'm just gonna sound like a broken record, but just enjoy the process. Like, that's the only point to all of this is if you aren't enjoying it, then it's not worth being in this and pushing yourself. You have to have fun with it and you have to make it a game. Keep it interesting. You're gonna have some highs and some lows, but like, if you really do love running and want to stick with it, you'll figure out different ways and you'll recalibrate if you need to. So just know that running will always be there if you want it to be.
I love that. That's my favorite thing about running is it can be there for you in all seasons of life in all different ways. So you have to enjoy the process and avoid that burnout and just find ways to love it. And I love your story of just your journey with running, how much it's shifted for you throughout the years and how it's always there. And you've been such an inspiration for so many runners. So thank you so much for taking the time to share your story. And we're gonna finish up with our fun rapid fire questions. The first question is, what is your go-to pre-run snack?
Peanut butter and jelly.
Love it. What would you pick for your last meal?
Ooh, so it would normally be like steak and potatoes, but with my hemochromatosis now. I mean, I guess if it's like my last dinner, then yeah, steak and potatoes.
There you go. Steak and potatoes. Love it. What is your favorite dessert?
Ooh, I would say vanilla bean ice cream with fresh Oreos, like chopped up gluten-free Oreos, which they make an amazing one now. I used to buy like the off-brand, but Oreos make a gluten-free version, double stuff,
All
delicious.
right. It has to be double stuff. That's a rule in our household. Love that. What is your least favorite food, or do you have one?
Ooh, I would say anything with ginger. Ginger is just like, it tastes like soap to me. And I feel like some
Oh.
people have that gene that, like, cilantro or ginger tastes like soap. And that's one for me. So, like, ginger beer, ginger root, or ginger anything.
Really? I haven't heard that with ginger. That's interesting. Okay, so ginger-based foods. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go? Or maybe go back to if you've already been somewhere.
Ooh, I've had great experiences in Spain. The paella is so good and sangria. So I've been there many times, but like, I think that's probably the top of my list for food for sure.
Well, good thing you'll be there next week.
Exactly.
Amazing. What is your go-to lazy meal?
Honestly, frozen pizza. It's so good. They make a great cauliflower crust. So if you're looking for that gluten-free pizza, just like pepperoni, I love it. And again, like, it's not all the time, but it's that lazy meal and it just does the trick.
We had frozen pizza last week and it was so good. I love that.
Just hits. It always hits.
It does hit. Like when it's a frozen pizza night, it really hits all the
A glass of wine too, honestly, like that is my favorite.
A classy combo. I love it. And last question, what is your go-to coffee or tea drink?
Ooh, I just like black coffee, honestly. I have black coffee every morning with my peanut butter and jelly. And then when it comes to tea, I love matcha. Matcha is like so delicious. So if it's a matcha latte or just a hot matcha, whatever it may be, I love especially green tea right now. I've been drinking a lot of green tea and matcha tea because it helps with iron. So it helps you with the chelation and it just like helps you get it binds it, I think, is what
Yeah.
it. Yes. And so I've
Exactly.
been drinking a lot of green tea. I've been peeing a lot because of that.
Nice
Exactly.
and hydrated. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Emma. This has been so fun, and we'll be cheering for you in Valencia.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me, Maddie. So glad we could
Thank
do this.
you. Good luck. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. Next week will be a Q&A with me, so if you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.